RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome into this Tuesday, July 17th, Landry Football Podcast. Hope the day is going well for you. We're getting closer and closer towards the football season, so I know you football junkies are getting more and more excited. Got the SEC and the Big 12 media days starting this week, if you're into that. Coaches talking and generalizing, and we're going to get into to kind of coincide with that. Some SEC West, SEC talk today. Take a look at the West, and time permitting, the East. May save that to Thursday if we can get through it. Of course, got the Big 12 to get through as well. We're going to work our way through the conferences, kind of tell you how some eyes each team, how they look. Of course, we've got the detailed previews of every school up on LandryFootball.com. We'll get into some of the comments yesterday made by Ed Orgeron, the head coach at LSU. Made a lot of, you know, Ed is honest, great guy, not what you'd call polished or what you'd call the type of person that thinks things out probably as well as he should. And it's kind of created a little bit of a storm of how he phrased some things yesterday with the situation with Matt Canada, his hiring process. I will take you through what happened in the whole hiring process of Matt Canada, what happened during the short tenure of Matt Canada, and then obviously why he was let go. We'll get into some NFL talk. We'll look at the Seahawks today, and that'll wrap up the NFC West, and we'll kind of break down the NFC West for you and see, since we've broken down each of those four teams, we'll get into kind of how that division may end up looking going into the season at least. And then, of course, we'll get your questions and remind you that if you've got a question that you want answered, send it to me at contact Chris, and we'll address it here. We've got, I think, three or four of them to answer today. Okay, but let's start. One quick reminder as well. Need to get this in, that time's running out on our summer savings special. Folks, it's at this point, you know, when you get into the season, the price will go back to the regular rate. We've tried to do our best all summer to help folks get prepared for the football season better than ever before. Getting all the roster analysis and the college and NFL teams, daily information, and do it at a discount. 50% off of a membership package. All you got to do is use the coupon code SUMMER. It's still in effect. Subscribe now to a year membership. You get the football season for free. It'll go back to the regular rate. So we want you to take advantage of that. Again, just a little time left on that. If you want us to promote your business, you know, all you got to do is contact us. Contact me at chris@landryfootball.com, and we'll show you how we can help you promote your business. You can grow your brand and right here at landryfootball.com. Yesterday at the SEC Media Day, Ed Orgeron was talking about his team and was asked a lot of questions about the offensive coordinator position. The offensive coordinator position is something that has been a topic of disdain by LSU fans for some time. The offense has been, to call it stagnant, has been very kind. Athletic Director Joe Oliva struck out on Jimbo Fisher, the head coach. Then he went with Tom, tried to go to get Tom Herman, struck out there. Part of what he did in hiring Ed Orgeron is, and as I said at the time, you know, I think you could make a strong case for Les Miles needing to be replaced. But as an administrator, you can't replace Les Miles with an Ed Orgeron. You have to get somebody that is really proven, that's really good. You can't get somebody just because you like them better. Because here's the story. Joe Oliva did not like Les Miles. Les Miles did not like Joe Oliva. Les didn't pay any attention to him. Less use leverage and opportunities at other places that they wasn't really a candidate for. And Joe was suckered into some moves and basically no one in the administration like Les Miles, because Les was from the Bo Schembechler mold, where, you know, he's going to coach a football team. He really doesn't care to have anybody other than it's involving compliance or something that's administrative. He doesn't want to have anything, you know, doesn't really want your input. He's going to do his job, which is the way it should be. Les wasn't all that successful. I mean, he was successful early, and he wasn't at the highest level successful, but he had success as a coach. I mean, I guess go back on my words. He's very successful, but not at the highest level what the expectation level was at an LSU. But that's only part of the reason why. That was the reason why they were moving on from Les. But the reason why they went and got Ed Orgeron, one, is because Joe was unprepared to go back into the waters and start to search for a coach, since he has not been successful in hiring coaches at any sport, at any place that he's ever been. But Ed Orgeron was the anti-Les, maybe limited, like Les was limited in terms of running a program, certainly offensively, but was a lot different than Les, because Ed is just an easygoing, big heart, wanted the job so bad, it's his dream job, that he'll do whatever you tell him. And he'll sit there and you know, he certainly, to get the job, was willing to do whatever. Want me to go out and hire an offensive coordinator? I'll do it. You know, that's Ed. And so the purpose was he was going to go out and hire the best offensive coordinator in the country. Well, Ed wasn't really knowledgeable enough about who was running the best offenses, who's the best fits. There was some people in the administration that wanted a name brand. Matt Canada's outstanding offensive coordinator, did an outstanding job wherever he's been. Now, he's very, you know, headstrong on how he wants to run his offense, but this was the direction that Ed was pushed into. Now, Ed had to make the decision, but Ed didn't do his homework, because while Matt is an outstanding coach, you can't hire an offensive coordinator, have him come in with his reputation. Remember, he was pushed out at NC State. As good a job as he did, he was pushed out of NC State because he rubbed some people the wrong way. And then at Pitt, they weren't all that sad to see him go either. It's okay. It's personalities. It's fine. You have to know what you're getting into. So Ed didn't do his homework. The administration certainly didn't do their homework on what they were getting in Matt Canada. Now, what they were getting is a really good offense coordinator. To give him the offense, he'll do things and he'll be successful, but he's going to be successful in his way. And it's not necessarily going to be to the benefit of the whole team, of the whole program, to the defense, how you run things. It's going to be statistically advantageous to how he wants to run it. Folks, you can have whatever you want. You hear me say, give this analogy. You can go buy any vehicle you want. Just do your homework. If you're on a farm and you want to throw tools, you don't want to use tools and you want to pick up. You don't want a sports car. You want a sports car for driving on the highway on weekends or whatever you do with sports cars. Know what you're getting. You don't hire a great Mexican chef that's never coached anything else. I mean, know what you're getting. Ed didn't know what he was getting. The administration didn't know what they were getting, good and bad. Matt Canada comes in pretty early, and because the administration was very involved in kind of pushing, you know, Matt was told by some members of the upper administration, Joe and one of his assistant ADs, that, hey, this is your offense. You can do what you want. We hired Ed. You know, Ed's, you know, wouldn't have the job unless, you know, he did things the way we wanted. You know, you got the job. You run your offense. This is your deal. You can't do that. Once you do that, you disrespect the head coach. If you're going to disrespect the head coach, why the hell do you hire him anyway? Well, you hire him if you're LSU, you're Joe Oliva, because you don't know who else to hire. You don't know what to do. You don't like the guy you had before because he didn't listen to you and he didn't win enough. So now you're going to go hire someone that's not even as good as the guy you let go, but he's more willing to listen to you than the other guy. So you like him more. Yeah, that's not how you do it. That's personal agendas. That's personal comfort. That's not putting the program first. And it's also, it's a reflection on the ignorance of the understanding of the process and coaches and how they work and how they mesh. So you basically, you kind of put some guys out there, and then Ed made the mistake of not doing his homework and pushing back and saying, no, I don't want him because this is not going to fit philosophically. So the blame is all around. It's on Ed, it's on the administration, it's on everyone. Matt comes in, Matt Canada is Matt Canada. He's going to run his offense, going to do things his way. He's been told, been empowered, that he's the guy, that the only reason why the head coach got the job was because he's willing to do this. You're coming to LSU as the offense coordinator. It's going to be your ticket to, you know, go and be a head coach. That's what's been sold to him. So he's coming in, not with the idea that, you know, he's going to be a great fit on a staff, but that he's king of the staff, that he's essentially more important than the head coach. The head coach is going to recruit. The head coach is going to delegate. You're going to be the guy. That's how it played out to Matt Canada. Well, you know how it played out when you have situations like that. And again, this is people that are not football people in the administration. Got an ex-football player that's an assistant AD, but he's never been involved in football and really knowing how to evaluate coaches and really knowing how to evaluate programs is not what he does. Not that it is at any place. But people usually seek out the right people to listen to. So Matt Canada comes in, and he's going to do all this, all the bells and whistles, all the thing that Matt does. Well, it's not what Ed wants, and it's not what his philosophy is and what he wants. And so we all know what happened. It led to some friction and issues in fall practice. It led to some issues at the beginning of the season, and it blew up in the Troy game, where basically Ed just said, we're not doing that. We're done. Our offensive line is struggling. They're young. They can't pick up all this stuff that you're running. We're doing something different. And then it completely collapsed in the Troy game. And it was an embarrassment. Everybody had egg on their face. Post-Troy game, we had the meeting with the AD, with the coach and his assistant. No. You don't have that. You send your head coach has got to do that. But when you're, as an administrator, as an athletic director, you're the one kind of pushing it. You're the one basically empowering the coordinator. You basically come involved in trying to mediate to make sure that the mistake is marginalized to some degree. The mistake that you made, in essence, you've got egg on your face. You're going to try to do your best to try to clean it up. That's what happened. So there's that come to Jesus meeting that they had. And it was basically coming out of that, Matt Canada was not shy about telling all of his coaching buddies, I've been told I can do what I want to do. It's my offense. Now, whether that's ego talking or not, but that just tells you the lack of respect that they had. Well, that's what happens, again, when you don't do your homework hiring guys and you hire a guy that, quite frankly, the coaches on that coaching staff at LSU respect Ed as a person. They love him as a person, but they don't respect him as a head coach. Every coach on that staff feels like they know more football than Ed, and in most cases, they're right. So it creates a problem when your top guy is not someone that everybody respects from an acumen standpoint. We all know that. You have some guys that are sales managers, they're not that good, they haven't produced, and you know, a salesman underneath them is more valuable. Another guy is just an administrator because he's not as good of a salesman. You know, not as much respect. It happens in a lot of businesses. It happens a lot in football. Definitely was happening at LSU, and to some degree still is. So as the season went along, it became clear that this was not going to be somebody that was going to return. Matt didn't want to stay. Ed, truth be told, Ed Orgeron wanted to hire Steve Ensminger as a coordinator when he got the job. When he was promoted into head coach, he wanted to promote Steve Ensminger as coordinator. That wasn't going to pass to the administration. They didn't want that. Not big enough name, not the right guy. It's not going to be a good PR. You know, again, all the insecurities come out. So Ed can't hire his guy. Now, whether Steve's the right guy or not will be determined this year. But that's who Ed wanted last year. And he thought that Steve did a good job during that interim role when Ed took over as an interim coach a couple of seasons ago when Les was fired. So Ed now gets his guy, and part of why he was able to do it. And the reason why people say, well, how do you go and hire somebody from within? Well, let me explain again how this played out real quickly. Oliva pushed to get a big name, pushed Canada. Ed basically had to acquiesce because he wouldn't have got the job otherwise, the head job otherwise. So he brings him in. It's not a fit. And then behind the scenes, you're not going to see it, you know, said publicly, but behind the scenes is, hey, your guy didn't work. Okay, my you know what's on the line. I'm going with my guy. So at that point, Joe Oliva has no clout at LSU. A lot of people want him gone. He's not been successful there. Ed, let's go pick his guy. Finally, he's got his guy. Whether it works or not, that's immaterial for this conversation. That's for the season to decide. But now Ed gets his guy because doing it the other way didn't work. So if there's any positive about the whole debacle of last year, is it at least got the administration out of affairs that they didn't belong from a football standpoint. Now, Oliva still pokes his head in there a little too much, but Orgeron, again, has at least got the people in place that he wants. So it's all on him. But that's how that played out. So when Ed says he made the wrong decision, well, he can say that. Every time he says that, I made the wrong decision. I made a mistake. That's what he said all day yesterday. I made a mistake. They said, well, how can you hire, the questions were, how can you hire Matt Canada? Let him go after 1 year. He says, sometimes you make a mistake. He's saying he's made a mistake. What he's really saying, every time he said that, he's telling Joe Oliva, you made the mistake. But he's going to say it. He's not going to say Oliva pushed it or, you know, administration pushed me to hire a name coordinator. That's what happened. But he's not going to say that, of course. I made a mistake. Well, in doing it, Ed thinks he's falling on the sword, and he is, but he's certainly putting it to Oliva and letting him know that it was a mistake. And everybody that's really close to the program knows how this played out. But what it also does is create something you don't want to do as a head coach. And some successful coaches have been, you know, snarky or have been controversial with their comments. That's not Ed's intent. Ed personally, you know, tries to make sure that he compliments everyone, but in saying that Matt Canada was a mistake, he's doing something that you really shouldn't do in the coaching profession. Some people today said, boy, what a great bowl matchup it would be to have LSU versus Maryland in a bowl game this year. But there's no question that it was a personality conflict, and it shows the level of dysfunction that's been at LSU through the hires. When you hire a brand name coordinator and he's there for 1 year and during that process is handcuffed. So the point is not that his offense didn't work. If his offense didn't fit, you should have never hired him. And if you hired him, you should let him do his job. It's again, a perfect example of the dysfunction. So look, I've known Matt for a while, and he's a bright coordinator. He'll do a good job at Maryland. He did a good job everywhere he's been. But, you know, he's out for Matt. He's out to promote his brand and not the brand of where he's coaching, which, again, is one of the reasons why I gave serious concerns and expressed to Ed why that wouldn't be a real good fit. And it wasn't. And it didn't even last a year. I thought it would be 2 years before that blew up. It didn't even take 2 months. So that's the story of the Ed Orgeron, Joe Oliva hiring process and then the hiring process of Matt Canada, which has gone astray, and why in Steve Enschmiger was brought in. If they were being completely honest, Edward said, I wanted to hire Steve in the first place. I was told that I needed to go out and hire a big name guy. Matt Canada was a guy that was brought to me. I didn't do my homework well enough. It was not a good fit philosophically. I screwed that up. It blew up. We had problems last year. We had lack of respect for authority issues. And then we had to move on. That's the truth 100% of what went on. But you're not going to get Coach to say that. That's obviously what put his bosses, throw his bosses under the bus. But that's kind of the whole process of how it played out. This leads to a couple of questions. I'm going to get right to the questions because it's a good entree into it. Matt asks, you mentioned that Mack Brown hired some hype coaches, but not truly good coaches during the decline of Texas football. Is there a way fans can read between the lines to predict whether a hype coach is going to fail because he isn't really that good, or whether a hype coach is going to be good because he's as good as a hype? It's tough, Matt, for as a fan to see it, because you're not studying tape. You're not trained to do that. You don't really know who's doing what at each operation. But here's a little tip. Follow the track of where the coach has been, or the front office guy's been, whatever the case may be. And this is for any business. So if a guy's been at five different schools, three or four different schools, and every position he coached and every responsibility he had, there was success, nobody has luck following that many places. So if there's success, he's got a hand in it. If he's successful one place and not in the other, it could be that he was good, but the resources weren't there, or it could be that somebody else was doing it. Very often the guy, when I call hyped, it's the guy that is a little bit more friendly to the media, gives good quotes to the media, returns calls to the media. Those guys get pumped and promoted and said, boy, you know, John Doe does a really good job. Boy, it's this, look, they get pumped up. The media is self-serving. The media serves themselves. They don't know what's going on, so they're trying to get some insights. They don't know how to evaluate. They're just trying to get insights into what's going on. And if somebody gives them insight, they love that guy. They promote them, and then, you know, and guys like that try to promote themselves through the media, and very often they get hyped. You've got to study tape. You've got to study the development process of coaches. Who does what? Not who gets the most credit, but who's actually responsible. Reputation is one thing, but knowing who someone really is the key, and what their responsibilities are. Knowing that a guy is not just a name with a reputation and he's followed success, you've got to know people on the staff that you coach. If you know good coaches and you do your homework and you build a network, you can call and find out about a certain guy. But you also have to know the person that's giving you the information. Is that guy someone that's a little bit prone to be jealous, a little bit prone to give more credit to somebody that he's closer to? See, it's not just a media thing. It's a coaching thing. People promote their friends, not necessarily the guys that are the best coaches. So knowing that, there's some guys that love coaching. There's some guys that love to be coaches. Different. You also ask, how do superpowers programs recruit talented coaches to improve their staff? Is it simply networking? It's not simply networking, but networking is a big part of it. All coaches come up with many other coaches. You're coaching with staffs. You learn who's good and you learn who's not that good. You get input as you move on and other coaches are on. You know a lot of people all around the country. You get help from them to get research on a person, to get advice. And you got coaches on your staff. You need a new line coach. You need a new linebacker coach, whatever. You talk about, you get some names from people on your staff. You start to vet them and you go from there. And, you know, you get people that know people who know people. And all of a sudden, that's when you start to get some names. And again, you do through the whole vetting process. So you can develop a little bit of a network to know the strengths and weaknesses of every coach on every staff. What I try to do, and I keep this confidential and I talk in a superfluous way about it on the website, but just like you scout players, scout coaches. If I'm going to scout receivers, Matt, I'm going to scout the receiver coach. I have scouting reports on all the coaches. I know a lot of people in college football and the NFL use me in terms of coaching evaluations, but they use other, you know, coaching sources too. Evaluating coaches is no different than evaluating players. There's a different set of criteria, how you teach, how you evaluate, how you recruit, all those things. Knowing that is what's really important. Here's what's really key. You got to know how to study tape. You got to know what to look for. And you got to know what the responsibilities are beforehand of all the staff. So you know who to affix credit and who to affix blame to. Everything is a staff. You give credit or blame as a staff, of course. But you must, as an evaluator, know who's responsible going in. Not on the back end, because on the back end, everybody's taking credit for all the stuff that's going well and kind of saying, oh, you know, I wasn't involved in that, for the stuff that didn't go well. So you must know beforehand who's responsible for what. And obviously, they're responsible for their position. But what is their what impact do they have? For example, a receiver coach is going to be really responsible for breaking down coverages of opponents and understanding that part of it. How good is a guy, your route runner? How good are you identifying coverages? If your receivers are not good at identifying coverages, you don't run good routes, your receiver coach is not doing a very good job. What is a good route and what's not a good route needs a lot more explanation. And we've explained some of that in past podcasts, but that's how you've got to study tape. So how do you get them? Once you identify them, it's the same process. It's like recruiting or free agency. You recruit to your program. So, I mean, if you're coaching at Middle Tennessee, you're not going to get somebody off of Tennessee staff to come there unless it's to a big time job. Unless it's a young coach that you promote to a coordinator or something. You know the different levels, obviously, of what programs are bigger and which ones are better and which ones pay more money. Well, it's clear that's where coaches want to go. They want to improve their stock. They want to go from being a position coach to a coordinator and a coordinator to a head coach and so on and so forth. So the process is, once you've identified and evaluated, which is the most important one, then you recruit them. You can recruit them with money, better pay. That's the most important thing. And responsibility. So you know who's really good. You increase their responsibility. You increase their money and you get them. You don't do your homework. Again, like a Matt Canada, good coach, really good coach, not a fit. You give them a lot of money. Doesn't work. Why doesn't work? Because you didn't do your homework on how the guy would fit on the staff. What he thinks he's coming in to run his offense with no interference, and he didn't really need to answer to anybody other than to just kind of nod to the head coach to appease him. Well, the head coach is saying, because that's what Joe Oliva said. Joe Oliva didn't tell Ed Orgeron that, hey, you hire this guy, and that's that. He basically, Joe Oliva took Matt Canada and said, you run your offense, you do your thing, I'll take care of Ed. Ed's got the job because I gave it to him on the condition that he go out and hire a big-time guy. So he interfered and it caused problems. So part of that Ed didn't know about because they didn't tell Ed. But again, Ed didn't do his homework and say, wait a minute, this guy is coming in. He's kind of being pushed by somebody else for me to hire him. And where is this guy's loyalty? Ed did his homework. It wouldn't have been a fit. So again, knowing the fit, knowing how good a guy is, going out, recruiting him and selling him like you do any other recruit. That's how it works. Evaluating coaches. I did this for years and years for Belichick, still do it. And then I provide by position some of the best coaches, up and coming coaches, just like players. Evaluating coaches are like evaluating players. Have the same grade sheet. I mean, the categories are different, but the same criteria of grading them. You know what those grades are. If you're a listener to this podcast or a member of LandryFootball.com, you know what the grading criteria is. I've given them on how to evaluate coaches. I've already done that several times. So that's how it's done. Now, Matt also asks, how come college and high school football is so popular in the South? South seems to have a special passion for not just college football, but the sport of football in general. Why is it? Well, football is a passion in the South. You're correct. Why? It goes back to the fact that football, in a different time and era, where you didn't have so much TV where you can watch anything anytime that you want. You know, baseball, you know, until the Braves came in town in Atlanta, you didn't have really a team in the South. For years and years and years, the most Southern team you can get was the St. Louis Cardinals. Pro football, you didn't get Southern teams until like 66 with the Dolphins. And Miami's kind of like a different South. There's just a big city in South Florida. But then you didn't get the Falcons and the Saints until like 67, 68. So growing up, you know, you had the Cowboys that came in 60. You had the Oilers as an AFL team. But in that deep Southeast, you just didn't have pro football. College football was king in the country for a long time. But in the South, that's who people identified with. their pro team was their college team. That's who they pulled for. And yeah, they would watch pro games on Sunday, but you didn't have the proliferation of games where, you know, kids grow up in Florida and could fall in love with a USC or something. Well, you didn't see, if you grew up in the South, you didn't see USC. You heard about them, you read about them. You might see Notre Dame. They were the nation's team, but you saw your local team. You heard them on radio, and that's who you grew up following. So there is that passion born out of the roots of who you had to follow in your area. So while, you know, others had basketball and baseball to follow, and they're popular in the South, they just were far behind football in terms of popularity. The weather is warm in the South, so kids play football all year round. And because you grew up around it and because you played it, you became a fan earlier in your life, and then there's just a bigger passion. So you're going back, when you're saying why is it so popular, you're going back to something that happened in the 30s and 40s and 50s. So we're going generations back why it was popular. And because you identified with your team, if you're a team like, for example, Alabama, they don't have a pro sports team in Alabama. They don't have a Major League Baseball team. They don't have a football team. They don't have a basketball team. They've got Alabama football. That's the team. In Louisiana, the Saints are big. The Saints are more of a Gulf Coast team. Pensacola, Mobile, Alabama, Gulfport, Mississippi, you know, New Orleans, big. You've got some fans in the state of Louisiana, in South Louisiana, but in North Louisiana, you got more Cowboy fans than you got Saints fans. So the Saints are a regional team. LSU is the state school. Well, LSU's been around a hell of a lot longer than the Saints. So in essence, to your question, college football is older than pro football, but that's true everywhere. But in the South, there was an identity that grew towards kids and then older people towards the college players. Their heroes were college players. So when you have the old guard that are big Alabama fans, big Ole Miss fans, big Georgia fans, big LSU fans, so on and so forth, well, their kids become really big fans. And their wives become fans. And then their kids become big fans. And their kids and their kids. And we've down several generations. Because of that, if you go around the country, most college football fans are alums of the school they went to. You grew up in Ohio, you went to Michigan, you're a Michigan fan. Probably hate Ohio State. And vice versa. In the Deep South, you would be surprised at how many people, first of all, some people in the South, a lot of them didn't go to college. Again, and I'm talking back in the 30s and 40s and 50s, where going to college was a privilege that very few. Well, those people became fans of the state school or the school that they followed. So if you're in Alabama, you're an Auburn fan, you're an Alabama fan, they're different pockets of the state, and you had a team, you picked a team, and that's that. Where your wife and your kids became fans, their kids became fans, so on and so forth. Now, as we got into further generations, going to college became more affordable, more opportunities were there. So you have kids that go to other schools. But here's the thing. You have kids that go to school at a Troy or an Alabama Birmingham or a South Alabama or a Nichols State in Louisiana or Northwestern State or, you know, wherever, Southeast Louisiana. They go to those schools, but they're LSU fans or they're Alabama fans or they're Auburns. If you don't go, if you go to the school, you're a fan. But if you don't go to the school, you're a fan if you grew up in the state. It's, again, like that's the pro identity. People are fans of the Chicago Bears, not because they play for the Chicago Bears. You know, very few did. But a lot of people that go to a school and never played sports, never played football, are football fans. In the South, you have that, but you also have the identity tied to that college team is really your pro team, who you follow the most. And so it's just led to a closer identity to the fan that doesn't go to college or went to other colleges. Now, if you go to Auburn, you're not going to be an Alabama fan and vice versa. But if you go to a smaller school, you probably are going to be a fan of a bigger time program. Because if you're in Alabama, you're following Alabama or Auburn football. It's not like going to California before the USC and UCLA game. They're fans of UCLA and UCLA, and they're passionate. They love their team. But you go around Southern California, there's a large percentage of the people that never even heard of football. They're not from there. They couldn't tell you anything about USC or UCLA, nothing. You go into Alabama, you go into Louisiana, and you talk about an LSU-Alabama game or an Auburn-Alabama game or what have you, and it's a big game, it's an important game. Everybody knows about it. You can't go into a supermarket without having the school colors being hung on like it's a parade. That's all part of the, I mean, it's marketing because everybody associates you with it. Their entire schedule, their vacation schedules, their weekend plans, marital plans. People don't have weddings in the South on Saturday because nobody would go. Even if they're not football fans themselves, their friends and family will skip out on them because they're going to the football game. So it's in their blood. It's from generations, and it's more towards college football. But you're right. I've noticed over the years in the South, there's an increase in popularity of pro football fans. Why? Well, you've got the Dolphins. You've got the Saints. You've got the Falcons. You've got the Jaguars. You've got the Titans. You've got the Panthers. Well, those places that didn't have pro football years and years and years ago, they have them now. So we're getting into at least the first generation, maybe into the second generation of kids that grew up with the Titans. I mean, you know, or, you know, with the Panthers. Those teams haven't been around very long. Hope that gives you a little bit of an idea. Really good questions there. All right. We're going to, I want to talk a little bit about that. We're going to get into the SEC West. I spent a little bit longer, so I'm going to keep that to Thursday. How about we do the West preview and the East preview on Thursday? Well, then we'll get to the Big 12 and move on. I want to talk a little bit about the Seahawks, a little bit about the NFC West. The Seahawks are the last team in the West that we haven't previewed, so we're gonna hit on them a little bit. They've made quite a bit of changes to the coaching staff and roster during this offseason, but everything centers now around this team, around Russell Wilson. And this is important to note because if you look at their Super Bowl run, they were built around their running game on offense and their defense. Now it's around Russell Wilson, and that's the real key. He had his best season when you considered how bad the offensive line was and the run game were last year. When I watch Russell, he's accurate, he's durable, he's a gamer. So they got to capitalize on what he brings in. He's not a spread it around quarterback, make a ton of plays from the pocket, but he's a winner, he's a gamer, he's a decision maker, he protects the football. Give him a running game, give him a defense. This guy's really good. Rashad Penny should make an impact as a runner and a receiver. The offensive line, as I mentioned, was a disaster last year. They traded for Duane Brown, who was okay. Justin Bridge play suffered last year because of instability on the right side. So his center play struggled. They signed DJ Fluker to play right guard, and right tackle Jermaine Ifedi is in a make or break mode this year. Much is going to be expected of Nick Vinette, who will replace Jimmy Graham and Luke Wilson at tight end. Defensively, Bobby Wagner and K.J. Wright didn't get enough credit for their play last year. It was outstanding. Wagner was arguably the best linebacker in the NFL. Wright put together a really good year. Frank Clark quietly put together another good season. Michael Bennett is off to the Eagles. Jerron Reed and Azeer Jones are solid in the middle. A linebacker, Malik McDowell, proved to be a really bad pick for them that didn't work out. Looks going to be a really interesting year for them. Green is going to have to play well for him. Disley's going to have to help him as a blocking tight end. Shaquem Griffin's going to have to help him on special teams. Trey Flowers is going to help him. So this draft class is going to have to really come in and help this group. Looking at the West as a whole, I think you got to look at a couple of things. It's chic to say Seahawks are rebuilding. I think they are. The Cardinals are rebuilding. I think they are. You could put them 3-4. Very possibly. But let me just say this. I think that whoever is 3-4 are pretty close. I think that the chic pick in the West is the Rams. Lots of big names. Had a real good season last year. Positive vibes. They're going to win the division. They're going to go win the Super Bowl. That's what everybody's saying. They're a good team. They're a team to beat, but now they're going to be the hunted. I think it's going to be a tougher season for them than most people think. I still think they've got a good chance to win the division, though. I think San Francisco's getting better. They're more like a 7-9, 8-8 type team that could, with good breaks, get to that 9 win, maybe even 10. I think they're on the verge, maybe another year, of being a playoff team, but they could make the playoffs. Difference between being a playoff team and making the playoffs, two different things. So, listen, I do like on paper the Rams and the Niners a little bit better, but I think Seattle is as good as San Francisco in some areas, and it wouldn't surprise me if it's Seattle that's chasing the Rams, and the Rams and the Seahawks and the Niners are really close. I do think the Cardinals are a little bit behind the other three, and I think if I were to say I would be surprised if this happened, I would say that if the Cardinals finished like second or third, that would surprise me. Now, I say that going in, but let some significant injuries take place to the Niners or the Seahawks, then clearly in four-team divisions, you got to flip that. So it's kind of how I see the West going forward. All right, we're going to run out today. We've gone a little bit long today, so we will get to the SEC West, and maybe we'll get time Thursday to do the Big 12. We'll see how it goes. Remember, you got any questions, send them to us here. We'll answer them. Like to get to those as well. But we're going to eventually, folks, break down all the divisions, all the conferences around the college football and NFL scene. Appreciate you joining us today. Remember, take advantage of the summer savings discount. Do it now while it's still available. Use the code SUMMER, and we'll see you next time.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We talk with Brandon Aiken, the Assistant Athletic Director for Sports Medicine at the University of South Carolina.
Basically, you know, it kind of started out as, I love my job, and my job is to return athletes as quickly and safely as possible. You know, and in that time, you get to have some good relationships with athletes and things like that. But it became somewhat of an issue at from time to time where it was kind of a running joke, you know, like, oh, I broke my leg. Just put some ice on it. You know, that was always the answer. Just put ice on it. Just put ice on it. And then one day I decided, you know what, we're just going to stop. You know, and it actually, you mentioned Gary. I saw a video with he and Kelly talking about that issue, and it just clicked. It's like, you know, it was one of those moments where it was kind of an aha thing, and it really kind of gave me the courage hearing them talk and having somebody out there that kind of felt the same way I did. And I was honestly afraid to make that move and you know, go over that mountain because I didn't know it was going to happen. I was, like I said, always brought up icing everything and that kind of thing. But at the same time, I was kind of fairly certain about, you know, my background as far as physiology and those kind of things that, you know, yeah, we're probably on the right track. It makes sense.
Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crichel, can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.